What's up, witches? Welcome to Hex Rated. My name is Blackbird, and this week we are talking about all things new moon and Imbolc that we both did. Plus, we're going to start taking a little journey in our minds to Iceland. So I hope you're ready for that, and sit back and relax and enjoy. Again, glad to be back. Thanks for listening. I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. You better stop the thing that you do. I said, oh, watch out. Recording.
I already did it.
What's up?
I already. Oh, did you do it before me?
I think so. But
we'll see. You little so and so.
I'm quick on the trigger, man. What can I say?
Oh, ooh. That's sexy. Just saying, I'm eating some of my sourdough bread with some Nutella, and it makes me want to punch a cloud. It's so good.
Why a cloud?
I don't know. Clouds deserve to be punched, don't they? A little, just a little.
I mean, it doesn't hurt them or you to punch them, so I guess it's a victimless crime.
Are you sure? No one is sure about that. The cloud can't tell you.
Oh, well, maybe when it rains, it's because the cloud is crying.
That's what I'm saying.
What the fuck are we talking about?
Welcome to Hex Rated. We're witches.
Not meteorologists.
Definitely not. No meteorology here. Literature break.
Yes.
You know how sometimes you just like pick up a random book. I mean, maybe not so random, and you just flip to a page and read a poem.
Sure, of course. Bibliomancy.
Yeah. So, is that what I'm doing? Yeah. Well, no, I don't know that it was any kind of, like, witchery.
Well, now it is, because we're talking about it on a witch podcast.
Well, I was gonna, like, I was just wanted to read it. It's Sylvia Plath, so is everybody ready for what I'm about to do to you? It's pretty short. Hang on. I'm going to get it, and I'm going to read it. Because I felt like it was really, I don't know, it spoke to me. Here we go. It's called The Rival. All right. If the moon smiled, she would resemble you. You leave the same impression of something beautiful, but annihilating. Both of you are great light borrowers. Her O-mouth grieves at the world. Yours is unaffected. And your first gift is making stone out of everything. I wake to a mausoleum. You are here, ticking your fingers on the marble table, looking for cigarettes. Spiteful as a woman, but not so nervous, and dying to say something unanswerable. The moon, too, abases her subjects, but in the daytime, she is ridiculous. Your dissatisfactions, on the other hand, arrive through the mail slot with loving regularity. White and blank, expansive as carbon monoxide. No day is safe from news of you. Walking about in Africa, maybe, but thinking of me.
Wow.
What the fuck? I mean, sometimes you just pick something up and read it and go, what, who, why can I not write? I mean, okay, the reasons why I can't write like Sylvia Plath are many. But
some of, like, them are good.
Just, yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Some of them are pretty, you know, I am, like, not super sad. But yeah, that was, like, devastating. And I just wanted to, like, start the podcast off with that because I just thought, I don't know, it really spoke to me and I could talk about it. But we're here to talk about something else, which I'm grateful for, because I think we could go down a super slippy spiral on that one.
Yes, absolutely. Although that's really good food for thought as far as sort of negative imagery of the moon, because I think that we encounter in the pagan sphere a lot of very insipid moon-related poetry that is very cheesy and trite and wholeheartedly positive. So I think the idea of a vision of the divine, like, lunar as being imperfect or even a rival, and then also just as women and sisterhood or lack thereof as being problematic, you know, I just think that there's a lot of uncomfortable feelings there that tends to not be a perspective that we get a lot. So well done.
Absolutely.
Miss S.
Hi, what have you been up to?
What have I been up to? Let's see. Oh, well, so last Saturday I had people over for New Moon and we decided to do a sort of sigil crash course workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And so I printed up these sweet little booklets with all the planetary magic squares and some magical alphabets and some examples of sigils and servitors that I've created. And at first I thought that we were all just kind of sort of choose our own adventure and everyone was going to kind of work independently and pick a style or method of making a sigil and just sort of show and tell. Mm-hmm. But our dear friend, who's a hairdresser with mermaid hair, suggested that we all do one together as an example. And so we ended up doing that, which was a great suggestion. I had this big pad of gridded paper.
Oh, neat.
So I had this big pad and I got a big marker and it was, so we did a few of the magic squares, which if you're not familiar is sort of like a Sudoku. It's a square of varying dimensions and then you fill it with the numbers that add up to that amount of squares, and the idea is that each row and column adds up to the same amount, and obviously there's only a certain amount of combinations that would generate that. So each of these squares is assigned to one of the seven classical planets. So Saturn, for example, is a 3x3 and it's got the numbers 1 through 9 scattered about it, and so on and so forth. So there's like 4x4, 5x5, 6x6, and so forth, and they're assigned to the different planets. So the way you would use these is you would print off a square and choose what your intention is, you know, finances, win a court case, beauty, person I hate, I hope their car breaks down,
nice,
or whatever. Hold on.
Yep.
Sorry, my camera was... Nope, it's still slipping.
Oh, no. Fix it, fix it.
Okay.
There, that's good. I can still see you. Yay.
Okay. Anyway, so, yes. So you would then choose your intention and then select which square you want to use based on the planet it's associated with. So if you wanted someone to like you, you might choose the square of Venus because Venus is the goddess of love. Or if you were doing, you know, win a court case, you might choose the square of Mercury because he's the god of orators and quick thinking and smooth talking and persuasion and so forth. So we did a few of those as examples, which was perfect because it's, as you are probably noting, listening to me describe it, it's one of those things that's much easier to see than to explain in words. So we did some of those. We also did some, I did some bind runes where we would take a word of intention and translate it or transliterate it into a different alphabet and then play around with those to make a sigil. Let me back up. We've talked about sigils before, but just in case you are less familiar with that term in this context, it's basically an abstract design that is meant to signify some kind of intention. And there's various reasonings or philosophies as to why they work. Mine tends to be that you are speaking the language of the subconscious, which is symbolic. So you're taking something that your conscious brain wants, which is whatever you've written out that intention to be, which can be an entire phrase or a word or what have you. And then by sigilizing it, creating an abstract design, you are making it now symbolic and not literal. So you're taking something in your conscious mind that's very literal and anyone can understand and is in the language you speak and so forth. And now you're turning it into something that is abstract and symbolic to sort of have that intention speak to your own subconscious or perhaps to the universe or whatever. So the idea is basically, you're letting yourself let go of that conscious critic that's like, oh, I don't deserve this, or this isn't practical, or that seems so far-fetched, that's never going to happen. Right. And so it lets you kind of have that intention running sort of in the background, right, the way that other unconscious processes would be, like the fact that your body is remembering to breathe or produce the right amount of stomach acid or whatever it is, or just sort of subconsciously monitoring your environment. Anyway, that's a whole big, long discussion, but that's what we did.
In a nutshell.
We did that.
That's awesome.
So we drew some and we did a variety of examples and it was very fun. There was no real ritual element to it. It was more just sort of a witch and bitch, everyone get together and chat. And one of my friends from our camp at Burning Man from Tulsa came down, which was a surprise. I didn't know she was coming, but it was a delight because I was super excited to see her. And she is like, she's just so enthusiastic and has so much great energy, but has no particular affinity for witchy stuff or background in it at all. So it was actually really great because she's super, super enthusiastic and curious, but with no
pretense
particular
or like,
background
yeah.
in it. Right. So, I mean, using her as sort of a gauge of, am I explaining this correctly? Is this way too much information? Am I assuming that my audience knows as much as I do incorrectly? You know, trying to hit that sweet spot of how do I explain something thoroughly without overloading people with information or without dumping a ton of information that people already know,
right,
and just wasting their time. So anyway, that was really fun. And something that is a good experience to have in my back pocket doing wishy stuff in the future is because usually I'm dealing that sounds so
usually
so clinical, like, oh god, when I invite these fucking idiots over to my house and like
nice
have to do stuff with them that was my idea
when I'm dealing with people.
yeah, but I mean just when you're in the position of sort of taking the lead,
right,
on something. Especially when this one was sort of a more academic sort of lecture, workshop kind of format as opposed to a ritual,
right,
kind of format. It was good practice, working on that and like keeping the vibe, but obviously it's less of like a, everyone's kind of in a woo woo spooky yooky state of mind. It's like all the lights are on. It's much more intellectual, like people aren't really necessarily feeling feels besides being curious or interested or confused or whatever. So yeah, anyway, that's what I did. What did you do?
I did a thing all by myself. Well, I made Pappy participate a little. So I did the whole thing, and we've talked about this before, where you walk around the house three times and say, you know, breed. Thy bed is ready, and you knock on the door and someone lets you in after three times and you make a little bed. So I did all that. Like I made a little bed. I had an offering of like a little glass of well, milk, but it was half and half, whatever. Little glass of half and half.
Even better.
I know.
More rich and luxurious.
Some bread that I have made. And then some, like, I know, fake white flowers. There's not a whole lot of white flowers hanging about right now in the dead of winter in New Jersey. So I had some fake white flowers and I put them on
just piles of trash.
I put them on a, no, that's not what South Jersey's like. I'm just kidding.
No, I'm just teasing. I'm
it's
just
okay.
teasing.
No, it's all
right. That's the part I know.
I mean, I know it does exist. So, no medical waste, but anyway, I put it all on a little plate and I took it out by the fire pit. And I set it down. So as soon as I gave the offering, knocked on the door, made Pappy let me in. And then I waited about like 5 minutes. I was just going to like look out and see if it was, you know, I don't know, there. I don't know why I was like looking at it. But I think I went out on the deck to like look at the stars or something for a minute. And there was this giant thing out by the offering.
A thing?
Well, I couldn't tell. What are you doing? It is causing a commotion. Do you need to?
Don't.
I was going to say.
Yeah, hold on.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll wait until.
Give me one.
Yeah, no, it's fine. Because there's a lot of background noise. I'll stop. What's wrong with your shit?
Oh, I have this little holder for my phone.
Yeah.
But it is,
not wanting to grip on the spot that I had it attached to. It's like a little clamshell.
Yeah.
Sort of bracket.
Yep.
Okay, hold on.
I was going to say it was great last time. Oh, there.
Well, you bragged on it, and then it was like, you know what?
Sorry.
Fuck you guys.
I kind of do that. Here, is it better now? I can see you, but that's good.
Yes, it is better.
And
it's not good.
We're back.
It's good enough.
So there's like, nice. So there's like a big white thing that I cannot tell from the deck what it is. Like, it looks like a cat, but you know, when it's dark outside, you're not really sure. It could be a possum, like a really big possum. Could be anything. Could be a little pig. I don't know. We live in the nature land. I have no idea what it is. So I go in the bedroom because it's closer to that window, is closer to the fire pit. I look out and it is. It's like a stark white cat. And that cat is like eating those treats. That cat is like all over that bread. And that cat is like, it's a small glass that I put the half and half in. So I think it was like cupping it with its hand and drinking.
What?
Okay. So...
okay, so I've always seen giving a saucer of milk to cats, like in cartoons.
Right.
But I didn't know that they would actually arrive immediately to sip on a dish of milk like Aristocats or something.
Like, A, I have never seen this cat before. And, you know, this is a pretty small neighborhood. There's only like 10 houses on this street and like zero people anywhere else around it. So... nobody that I know of has a cat except for us. People have dogs. That's A. B, this cat stayed there for 45 fucking minutes. So if you don't tell me I didn't call a goddess up, I don't know. But I'm pretty sure that was witchcraft.
For real? Well, we have had a history of summoning the black kitties.
Yes, for sure.
I have usually a cast of 3 or 4 that just sort of hang out in my yard and make people think that there's a glitch in the matrix because they keep seeing what appears to be the same cat walking around when it's really 4 of them. Yes. But like, I feel like statistically of outdoor cats and feral cats that I see, pure white ones, I don't know if anyone's like a cat breeder that can give me the actual breakdown on the Mendelian genetics of how frequent white cats are, but I feel like I don't see them very often.
5%, bitch. I looked that shit up on Google.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, 5%.
I love that you knew that I would probably ask.
Well,
that.
Of course I Googled, what is symbolism of white cat? Because, you know, I figured, well, this means something, right? It's not just, it can't just be nothing. And it's like, it's totally in keeping with what Imbolc is and what breed is. It's like,
yeah, absolutely.
Newness, fertility, growth, you know, change. Like, it's like all the things that Imbolc is supposed to be about, like the turning of the starting of something new, the rebirth of the beginning of the rebirth, like... And I was just like, well, I'm pretty sure I did that. I don't know.
Breed appeared as a cat and drank your half and half.
I mean, and drank it. It was.
Well, so the fact that it was a white cat, because the whole thing about Imbolc is that she's usually the traditional offerings are cream and dairy. The traditional color is white. People like Santa Lucia's Day in the Nordic countries, you dress in white and you put candles on your head.
That's what I'm saying.
So the whole thing about white and milk and wow.
It was crazy.
You have to tell me if you sight the kitty again or if it was a one-off and that it really was a...
I look outside every night again and I haven't seen that cat. Now, I guess the test would be if I put another... plate with bread and milk out, if that cat comes back around.
Do cats eat bread?
I mean, this cat ate everything. I mean,
wow.
Which was crazy because A, it was pretty cold, so I thought, well, a little bit of milk will be left and it'll freeze. No, that cat, and the weirdest thing, the glass was still standing straight up. Like, it's a small glass, like you could barely, the cat would not have been able to put its face in the glass. Like, it's one of those little, like, Tony Soprano glasses that they would drink wine out of, like a teeny little, like bigger than a shot glass, but not big. So that cat just like scooped milk out with its hand, like the entire glass of milk. So And didn't tip it over. Didn't tip it over at all.
My cat refuses to eat an entire portion of anything that I leave for it. So I'm flabbergasted, one, that of all these crazy coincidences, but just the fact that the cat consumed all of it.
All of it.
I feel like cats are very dainty eaters. It's not like a dog that chomps first and then asks questions second.
And the cat was big. It wasn't like the cat was clearly, emaciated or starving, because clearly I would have brought it in and made it mine. But, I almost felt like I didn't want to disturb it. And it was there for so long that I kept looking out the window and telling Pabby, it's still there. It's still there. Oh my God, it's still there. It was just I don't know. It was really freaky. So my in bulk, I think, was pretty successful. Felt good.
Yeah, I'll say. Did you get any signals from Big Boy and Little Girl?
No. Zero signals. No.
I'm referring to her two kitties.
Radar, not at all on. No, they're just
Chico Grande and Chica Chiquita.
Chica Chiquita. No, they were just no, they didn't understand why I kept looking out the window. That was but they would no, because they can't see that far down.
But they didn't sense an animal's presence.
No, I mean, it's also the house is pretty shut up and everything. So the only thing I was thinking is if that cat got curious, that cat could definitely walk up the stairs to the deck and be right there. But it didn't. It just ate everything and took the fuck off. Another weird thing, it was really windy that night. And those fake flowers stayed in the exact same place. And they weren't tied to anything or anything. They were just on the ground. I don't know. It's fucking weird. Wow. Yeah, it was weird. The whole thing was weird.
This is very fascinating to me.
I know. I think my yard, I walked around the yard today a lot because I was picking up sticks for my fire that I'm going to make. up sticks. And it just it feels good out there. I hadn't really put my feet in the land, so to speak. I mean, I haven't really spent a lot of time outside because it's cold. So it was just good to do that. It felt good. It felt like they accept me.
There's something about gathering stuff off the ground that's just so meditative and primal, because it's a soothingly repetitive task, and it's very mindless. It's just your monkey brain seeing patterns of your scanning for the thing you're looking for and you're gathering it. But just bending over and touching the ground is also just something that's so hardwired to give you a pleasure endorphin response, that doing something gathering is just very soothing and connecting. And
agreed.
I always, because in the evenings, I usually go out and gather weeds to feed my little rabbit. And it's just, it always feels so good.
Yeah. I think it's, especially when all the leaves are just on the ground, dead. I don't know. I love this time of year. It's going to snow this week. I'm so excited. Yes, I'm doing a little dance for the people at home that cannot see me do this shoulder shrug dance situation. I've been waiting for the snow for forever. So
I have California Dreamin' by the Mamas and the Papas, because you said all the leaves are brown and the sky is gray.
Okay, well,
on a winter's
day.
I was raised by an elder boomer.
Can you fucking tell?
You know what? I heard that. I'm pretty sure. I think I heard this on VH1 Behind the Music, so it must be true.
Let's hear it.
That Cass Elliot wanted to join the group, and they were kind of like, "Ugh, I don't know." And they were on vacation someplace, and she got conked on the head by something that fell off a shelf and had a concussion.
No.
And the problem was, previous to that, she could not sing this one high note that they were like, "Oh well, I guess you failed the audition." And after she got her head conked, she could suddenly sing it.
Okay.
And they were like, well, crap.
That's fucking nuts.
You're in the band. And she's the best one.
Did she really choke to death? Is that how she died?
I believe that that's apocryphal. Like, the story of, Elvis dying on the toilet or whatever.
Okay.
I think that was just a real shitty, fat-phobic thing that people came up with.
I do know that your life somehow bleeds into mine without us knowing, because I, and I love you, but I really dislike the Doors. And yet hang on, all of the Doors songs just play themselves over and over in my head. So I think Jim Morrison is reaching out going, you don't really hate me. You don't. He's just,
they're catchy songs.
He's just touching me with his fucking dead finger going, you like
come
me.
Come on, now touch.
Exactly.
Me,
shut up. Can't you see that I'm not afraid?
Okay, that is not a great Doors
really,
song.
Because that's the one that plays the most in my head. And then Don't You Love Her Madly.
Oh, that's a good one.
Crazy fucking orchid. Anyway. Okay. This is fun.
I actually learned to walk in high heels by listening to Hello, I Love You.
Oh.
Hello, I Love You. That was the beat that I used in my head to get my walk down.
Oh. Ooh. Yes. That's a great idea for those of you that don't have your walk down yet. Start now.
Yeah, if you're about to get into a catwalk off and you don't know what to do, sing Hello, I Love You by the Doors in your
head.
Just
play it. Just play it in your head 24/7 like I do.
Sure.
All right. So while that happened, I went to Philadelphia yesterday.
Yes. That's what I was about to interrupt you with. I was going to interrupt you with the thing that you were already telling me.
See, I'm already on it. So, yesterday is kind of a day that I like to try to make some activity with me and my husband, because it is the anniversary of his brother's death, and his brother took his own life 6 years ago. So I like to try and, I don't know,
wow,
like
that
it feels like it's, it doesn't feel like it's been that long, right? It's weird.
No.
But so I try to let's do something, not to like take his mind off of it, but like, let's have an activity so we're not just sitting around like crying. So we went to Philly and he wanted to visit a couple of tattoo shops. So let me tell you about the one that blew my mind. There is a tattoo.
I will let you tell me.
There's a tattoo shop in Philadelphia called True Hand Society. And probably one of the better known artists there is Jesse Flora, and Kate Collins is also pretty well known. And let's see, Kate does a lot of witchy women and black cat things. And
oh, hey, yeah, yeah,
I've got one of her prints, and I really, really, she wasn't there. She does like part-time in Austin, part-time in Philly, but Jesse was there, and Jesse is an extremely talented lettering tattooist. I mean, just beautiful lettering. So we went up to meet her. Pappy also makes machines, so he gave her a machine. But this tattoo shop is in a church that's like 100, 150 years old. It is rad as fuck. I mean, first of all, they've really like curated the space, right? So it looks very much like they kept the organ into, like, it's a big, what do you call those kind of like big, like tabernacle pipe organ.
Right.
And it's still intact, or at least all the pipes are visible and intact. And then the choir loft is still there. You can like stand on the choir loft and look over. All of the tattooers, like stations are very like, I don't know, they're all made of wood. It's very like, it's very warm. I don't know, it's such a great space. So,
but the picture you showed me, yes, it was kind of an open concept.
Very open.
So you've got,
right,
this big, you know, if you removed all the pews, you just have this big open high ceiling empty space.
Right.
So there's this openness and airiness to it, but instead of it feeling empty, it, at least from the picture, appeared very warm,
yes,
and more inviting, like more communal.
Yes.
Because sometimes that can actually feel like agoraphobic, where you're like, oh, it's too much open space. I feel very vulnerable and observed. But it actually was like, oh, this is nice. Everyone's kind of at their own station doing their own thing, but we're all doing our own thing together.
Right. It's very open, but I think probably like if you're a person that doesn't necessarily want everybody to see you get tattooed, my guess is they probably have screens for more, you know, if you're getting, you know, tattoos on your boobs or things you don't want people to just like, if you don't want to just be hanging out in the shop with all that on display. Right. I'm sure they have screens and stuff, but yeah, it's a very open concept, but it just felt so warm. They have some like some greenery in there, and it was just like, I don't know, just a, I don't really walk into tattoo shops and get blown away by the decor, but this definitely has a, like a, like a on purpose feel, and they are custom by appointment only, so you have to be buzzed in. People just can't walk in. And it was just really, really special, and I can't wait to get tattooed there. And I told Pappy, I was like, I wish you could get a job there. He's like, ha, 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 I cannot. I was like, but why? But he'd have to have a full, like a full-on clientele to be able to work there. Anyway, that was gorgeous. But the thing I did that I said I was going to do, and we did do, was go to Eastern State Penitentiary.
Oh, shit. Oh, wow, shit. That was like the quickest turnaround from... hey, you should go check this out, to someone actually going and doing the thing.
Well, we were like already going to Philly, so I thought, well, I mean it was totally affordable. It's $17 to get in, and they have a great little audio tour that takes you through the entire place. The thing that stuck out to me the most, because it was, I felt spooky-ooky in like two places. One was the main corridor that you walk down where the original penitentiary prisoners were, which was complete solitary. This will blow you away. So this was like 1830, right? And the whole idea was like, we're gonna put people in solitary so they can figure out how to be penitent for the, you know, repentant for their sins. So they would keep them in solitary. The front door didn't even have like a window or anything on it. They couldn't look out the window, but there was a skylight in each cell. And there was a door in the back of the cell that would open up to like their own little private work, like exercise yard, just
like a little run.
Yeah. Like a little, like, yes, like a little run. But so only they could go there, and they could only go there like at designated times. They couldn't go just like whenever the fuck they wanted. But even the guards would wear socks on their shoe, like wool socks on their shoes to keep it quiet. Like,
oh my God, I didn't know that.
Yeah, silence.
That's psycho.
Like, no talking. You'd get in trouble if you talked. They found prisoners passing notes, and they, like, fucked them up. You know, like, so it was, like, that was the original intent. But then by the, I'm going to forget, but I think it was, like, 20s or 30s, they were like, we got to make this into a real prison now. So that's when they added the other cell blocks with the double, like, the double... two stories with the doors that have, you know, you can see through the doors. It was just like a regular prison then. So, but so the two places I felt spooky ooky in were the main corridor, because it just is so fucking old, and you're like, right. I don't know. It's, you know, it's like, I mean, it's not like standing in Europe and being around that shit that's old, but it was still like, ooh,
you know, where the history comes
you
from.
You know, Eddie. And so that was where, and then up on the catwalk, because you could only see the one of the two story ones, like from up, you couldn't go down on the main floor. You were only able to see it from the top. And they have it basically, you just look out. You can't like walk down the corridor or anything. You can just look out over it. It's a very, like, very picturesque scene. And I think that's where that one shot is from that you were talking about, the video. But, and it may not be the same cell block, because I think they were all designed like that, but it was, yeah, it felt very, I don't know, it felt very heavy, you know?
Yeah.
Just, like, really heavy. Not necessarily, like, I felt, like, ghosty vibes. I just felt, like, the presence of hundreds of men, you know, just, like, not having a good time. I mean, imagine that, but it just felt very, very, like, sad and angry. So that was interesting, but they have a really fantastic exhibit at the end of it about how prisons are now, which is not good. So
no,
it is not, but it was a really great interactive, exhibit. And I really could not recommend it more. I'm going to go back, because I didn't spend near enough time there. I want to spend like, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours there. We spent about an hour and a half, so I'm going back and I will report more, but it was fucking amazing. So I highly recommend Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia.
Yes. Well, I was about to ask, or I was going to mention that the actual architecture of it, the outside wall, I was trying to find specs. So I'm on their website right now in a different screen, but I was trying to find, because there are these massively thick walls, yeah. because you're talking about before you have like rebar and right. industrial concrete and steel, and I believe it's just brick or like brown flagstones or something. So these walls are just massively, massively thick. And just the weight of the building, the physical weight of it, and like just the visual weight in your peripheral at all times of these massive dark walls. Yeah. I mean, because you said heavy, and that's what it made me think of, that everything in this place is designed to be and feel heavy.
Right. Yeah, the whole,
in a literal and figurative way.
Yeah, like the Gothic architecture. And the thing that was interesting to me is like the windows on the, there's like the castle like slit windows on the outside, they're fake. Like all the like the ramparts, you can't get up on them. Like it's designed like a castle, but it's kind of like, we're just faking it. We're just making it look like a castle. It's not really a castle. But the
yes, it's very fanciful.
Right.
It doesn't look
it's like out of time.
Clinical.
Right. It looks out
yes.
of time. But the interesting thing is that those walls you were saying, they're so thick. That was one way they kept the prisoners like not being able to really talk to each other. The doors were shut, no window, no bars in the front door, in the door to the cell. And then the walls are so fucking thick, it would be really, you'd have to yell. And then that would get you in
trouble. Oh, you'd have to be screaming at the top of your right. lungs. Like, it's not like some apartment where it's just you and drywall and everyone that lives right. there.
No, not at all. Not at all. So, but it was very cool. I loved it. And then we tried to go to his favorite Chinese restaurant, and it was really hard to park. So we just left. Well, you know, it's only 40 minutes away. We'll go back. But that was awesome. But we are really here now that we've, you know, chatted for a while. We're really here to talk about your awesome trip to Iceland.
Oh, thank you. I have one other thing to say about Eastern State Penitentiary.
Let's please.
Because I was trying to find some like frequently asked questions, like how thick are the walls? And I couldn't find that. But apparently they have a special guided tour that says sensory friendly. And it says Eastern State invites people who are blind, who have low vision, or who have sensory sensitivity needs to experience the historic site through a sensory-friendly touch tour. These guide-led small group tours begin at 9 a.m., blah, blah, blah. Yeah, so you can use the educator leading the tour will use elements of verbal description, guided touch, and sighted guide techniques during the tour.
That's awesome.
In addition, sensory backpacks will be made available, which contain noise-canceling headphones, sunglasses, a glitter jar, and other fidget toys. And it's free. You just have to advance register. It's limited to 10 people. So that is one of the coolest things I've ever fucking heard of.
I would say this, like, to me, the people that have not only like been involved in the restoration, but the exhibits, it's very progressively, and it's not political. It's really just presenting facts, but they're very like inclusive, very, the people that have done this have really done it right. Like I've been to a lot of museums, but this one just
I've been to a lot of prisons.
Been to a lot of prisons. No, I've been to a lot of museums, and this just felt like care was taken, and I think that's really important. Like it's not just I'm just going to show you an old building. It's not. It wasn't like that. It was like we're really purposefully designing this so you really get the sense of what it was like to be here. It sat empty and abandoned for like over 10 years, and it was all,
but it's in the middle of the city.
It is.
It's like,
right.
It's this honking piece of brick. It's unmistakable.
It takes up a whole city block. I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And it's not nondescript. Like, as you were saying, it's very, I don't want to say whimsical because that kind of sounds cute, but it is. It's a fantasy style of architecture that is completely unrelated to its purpose
right.
and unrelated to the architecture around it. So it's not like just a strip mall or something that has that white t-shirt principle,
like,
of even though it's abandoned,
basically
you
right
just
down,
kind of tune it out.
It's basically right downtown too. Like it's literally
yes.
a hop, skip, and a jump from like tourist shit. So, I mean,
yeah, it's like right by the where the Rocky Balboa statue yep. is and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. But it was really well done. I really liked it. Can't wait to go back. And then they sent a follow-up survey today in the email. Wow.
In the emails.
And it was just really, really, the survey was even fucking good. So I'm pretty impressed by, but the thing that I was going to say is it sat empty and abandoned for like over 10 years. You should have seen like the pictures of it being overgrown and everything. Like, I can't even imagine what was involved in trying to restore this prison. And, you know, honestly, the main corridor, the cell block one, they haven't restored those rooms really. Like, there's just like rubble all over the floor and shit. Like, it looks like the bed frames are still in there, and there's like a little nightstand that looks like it looks fucking original. But they haven't gone to the extent of, hey, let's make this up nice and neat. Like kind of like Alcatraz, where it looks like somebody could still live there. You know, you could still put somebody there. Doesn't look like that. It's like kind of a ruin, but really well done, because they rope them off, and then they have a couple that you can actually walk inside and see what it feels like. It's like a pretty big, I mean, for a cell, it's like 8x12, which is, you know, decent size, but if you're there all the time and not able to talk to anybody, you're still going crazy. Sorry.
Yeah, I love that they phased out that like complete solitary where you have a not great size room, but bigger than probably what most people are thinking when they think of a prison cell. Yeah. And a little outdoor run, which was also not super spacious or luxurious or anything, but is more like in modern prisons, you don't have your own like little private tiny, tiny courtyard. Right. But the reason why they phased that out is I presume it's probably due to space constraints, right. And not because they were like, putting people in solitary indefinitely is probably not great.
Right.
They were just like, we don't have the room to give people this type of privacy.
Right. I think a little bit of both. And it, honestly, it seems kind of like, look, I'm no fan of any system that currently exists in our country, but I kind of liked the idea better of the penitentiary, of the here, spend your time in silence, think about your crime, you know, or like horse, think about your horse thieving, and then go on about your merry way after you've finished your time. Unlike, you know, prisons today where just it's like a cycle, you know, come in, come right. out, come back in. So I don't know, like, not that it was better or worse. I know nothing really if it was effective, but I thought it was interesting and a lot more than just, it seemed like a lot more thoughtful than just like housing people that committed a crime. So I don't know. Right. It's interesting.
Yeah. And it's fascinating that people that had very good intentions, perhaps did not meet those goals.
Right.
So, and that's always, I mean, that's the thing that happens. People can have great intentions and it ends up still being a failed experiment.
Right.
So yeah. Well, I'm glad that you had fun there.
I did. It was very interesting, very educational. Glad we did it. Do you want to talk about Iceland?
Sure.
Do you? Okay. Well, I am going to ask the question that is on everybody's mind. Well, and I mean, I know, but I want you to tell the people, why did you choose Iceland? Because this was an anniversary trip, am I right?
Yes, it was my 10th wedding anniversary.
Yay, congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
I was there.
So the last time. Yeah, you were. we didn't get married, but you were there.
I was.
But yeah, so the last time that we went abroad together was 10 years ago, because we kept being like, let's save up and we'll go out of the country again. I've been out of the country since then. We just haven't been as a couple. But anyway, so I had been wanting to go to Iceland for a long time for my own reasons. I thought that I'm interested in all the Viking history stuff. The Icelandic sagas are a major source of information that we have about pre-Christian Viking stuff, even though they were written in the Christian era. Just the nature of seafaring blows my mind. Like, yeah. I keep thinking that all this went down when Vikings were colonizing Iceland in, like, I don't know, the 1400s, like right before Columbus. It was like 800
before,
or 900.
Yeah, way before.
AD. It is way before.
Like Beowulf time, right? Yeah.
Yes, literally, yes. And so that's very fascinating to me, the history. Lots and lots of modern fiction and film is inspired by that. Tolkien in particular. Mm. Supposedly modeled his hobbit holes out of the turf roofed
that makes sense
farmhouses.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I was very interested in is obviously the geology is nonstop bonkers.
Bananas. I know.
It's right up. So basically the island of Iceland is a volcano that is formed because the North Atlantic plate and then the Eurasian plate are like pulling apart.
Yes.
So this seam where these two spots are moving, I think they said that it moves about as fast as your fingernails grow.
Yeah, it moves.
So think about that.
Yeah. I mean, but on a much larger scale, but yes. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's how fast the plates move apart from one another. So the island has grown like several inches. Since the Vikings arrived. But anyway, so there's all this volcanic activity. It has a very unique ecosystem. I didn't know this till we arrived, but apparently there's no large predators. There's not really any mammals that live there other than ones that were brought.
Oh, really?
So because it's such a young island and it's so isolated that you wouldn't get anything accidentally migrating there or migrating on foot.
No, like fish decided to like start walking.
Yeah like evolution didn't start over on it, which I didn't ever think about, but all the mammals on the island were brought there, so like sheep and
goats and
rodents
and goats and cats and dogs and
goats and cats
and cows.
the two major categories of things. Goats and cats
the end. That's interesting. I never
is it
thought
a goat of... or is it a cat? Those are the only two choices.
I never thought about that, how like animals can't get there unless you bring them. Like the animals just weren't hanging out on Iceland by themselves,
right? Or if it was something where at a previous epoch there was a land bridge, like the sea level was lower,
right?
Or it's just so old, like millions of years old, that it used to be part of Pangaea or something. But that's the whole thing about Iceland. It's not that old. It's new, geologically speaking. So anyway, it's just beautiful. It's kind of similar to, I would say, which I haven't been, but New Zealand, mm-hmm. where you think of someplace that's just gobsmackingly beautiful. And everything that is epic is filmed there because it just doesn't look real.
It's like blow your mind constantly. Because remember me in Sri Lanka where I just wanted to punch somebody with how pretty everything was? Like,
oh my God.
Like, it hurt. It hurt me.
Yeah, we were so overloaded with how beautiful everything is. We circled back and the way we were reacting to it sounded like we were mad.
Right, exactly.
You're like,
It's like,
I can't even.
You can't because you're.
Seriously?
Your brain can't process it. It's just like, so Iceland is like
you
that too.
You just run out of words. Yeah. You're just like,
I'm not going to make it. Shit.
You sound disgusted.
Right?
It's so beautiful. It disgusts you. Yes, it is. Awesome. It is very like that. So basically, I was interested in the fact that it's sort of a triple threat where you have geology, natural wonders, outdoors kind of adventure kind of stuff. You have history and culture kind of stuff. And then, you know, Reykjavik and just the country in general is fairly progressive and modern and stuff. So you have a lot of cultural stuff. Reykjavik, more so in the aughts and 90s, was renowned for having a pretty good, like, electronic music scene.
Ooh.
But so it just seemed like it was ticking a lot of boxes of the different types of vacations you could do. The second reason why we went for this particular trip was Iceland got real on the quarantine boat way early, and they've had experience with other types of quarantines. Mm-hmm. So they don't have any COVID restrictions anymore because they've kind of got, knock on wood, a lid on everything. And so there's no testing to enter the country and there's no quarantine period. And so they're, and everyone there is, you know, healthy, and there's no COVID in the wild. It would only be coming from other travelers. So your risk of contracting it is low.
How do they ensure that the travelers aren't bringing it? I mean,
I don't really know. I think part of it is just that because there isn't any of it in the wild, that they're able to sort of isolate people as they get sick.
Just guessing.
I think that's part of it. So
that's good,
was the main thing because we were looking at other places and they had like mandatory quarantine holds where you can't just like disembark from a plane and go through customs and then you're there. And then also like I wanted to go to Egypt and first of all they have like a 70% unvaxxed rate or something. So the potential to contract it while you're there is quite high. The options to be treated are not fantastic. And then also like leaving the country, like the procedures to get in and out of the country if you're testing positive, it's like a 2-week mandatory quarantine if you're trying to enter. So then, you know, after that your whole entire trip is fucked. So that was very, very stressful. So I was looking at places that was the other option we were looking at maybe was like someplace like Hawaii, which, you know, is domestic but
also volcanoes. Hey.
Also volcanoes. Yes. There's clearly a theme.
Yes. Well, so how long is the flight?
The flight, so we flew from Dallas to New York. We went through JFK, which is a shithole.
Yeah. Always.
Has always been and continues to be.
Will never change.
An abject shithole. Jesus Christ.
I hate JFK so much. I will do whatever I can to not fly into JFK, in or out.
Oh my God. I would take the subway and then the path, the subway to New Jersey. Mm-hmm.
To go out of Newark?
To go to Newark.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's totally worth it. So yeah, anyway. So our flight left Dallas like around like 1:45 and it arrived at JFK at like 6 or so. So it's like a 4 or 5 hour flight. And then it was only, I think, like a 5 or 6 hour flight to Iceland.
Okay.
But because of the layovers and everything, basically we had to get up at like 7 or 8 to be awake and pack up our stuff and get to the airport and be there before, you know, to get through security and blah, blah, blah. So it was basically like we got up around 7 or 8 and we arrived in Iceland local time at 8 a.m.
Yeah.
So we never really, like, we got to sleep a little bit on the plane.
I know how that is.
And then they do have this thing at JFK, if you were there, where you can like rent a little cubicle and take a nippy nap.
That's nice. Did you do it?
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Was
it restful?
Yes. I took a nap. I'm a champion when it comes to sleeping.
Yeah, that's true. You can
so.
Sleep on a fucking folded down tray. Like I've seen it. I've seen it happen.
Yep.
Is that the only redeeming feature of JFK?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I hear you. Okay.
That's going to be my final answer.
So.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So so then we arrived, and so we got to our, we rented a car, which I was kind of nervous about. My husband doesn't really drive, and he certainly does not drive in, like, weird and unfamiliar, stressful situations.
Right.
So I knew from the get-go that I was going to be driving 100% of the way. And so we rented a car. They drive on the same side of the road and everything. All the signs and speed dials and everything are in kilometers, which is fine because you just do those numbers.
Yeah.
If it says don't go faster than 90 kilometers, you just go with what's on your speedometer. You don't have to like do math in your head. But
hey, hang on 1 second. What are you touching? Are you touching things?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe
it's like, well, yeah, I hear like scritchy scratch the whole time. Scritchy scratch.
Oh, maybe.
I'll cut this out. Sorry. That's okay. Just keep your hands in your lap, young lady.
Keep your hands in your lap.
Okay, that sounds bad. All right, keep your hands on the table. Hands where I can see them. I don't know.
Hands where I can see them.
So,
yeah, so we rented a car and checked into our hotel. The airport into Reykjavik is like 45 minutes outside of town. Mm. So... that was the other thing that was very weird is I'm used to Texas where you can drive for 8 hours and still be in
Texas.
In Texas.
Yes.
And then I also looked at a map and eyeballed it to get this statistic. You could probably fit about 5 or 6 Icelands in Texas.
Yeah, it's pretty small, right? I mean,
I know that I'm very obnoxious, but it's a real thing that Texans measure quantities in how many of it could fit inside Texas.
True.
So when like we were looking at our itinerary, it's like, okay, so we're gonna get up at this time and we need to check into this or that, and it's over in this other town, and it's like looks this far up the coast, I'm imagining that it's gonna take like 4 or 5 hours, and it's like it's 45 minutes away.
We'll be there
so
in just a little
scale.
Bit. Yeah, that's crazy.
But the other thing is, because the landscape is so dramatic, it also feels like you are going way, way further than it seems like you should be.
Well, because
you're
like
just seeing too much in too small of
say,
a space.
Because
it's
usually when you take
very disorienting.
Like if you take a 45-minute drive, I mean, and some you're say you're not the driver, you're in the passenger seat or whatever. You're like fucking looking at your phone, doing whatever. You're not. Your eyes aren't focused on the landscape every single minute of your drive. So I can see why that would make it seem like really long, because you're just like taking everything in, like, holy shit. And I can't imagine what it looks like from the airport to the city. Is it just,
yeah, you go through like 4 different types of landscape.
What? Oh my god.
Yeah, well, because it's on the coast, right? So you're looking at the ocean, and then you drive through this lava field, which is flat. And it's these big, huge boulders. So it was where, like a river of lava has flowed through and ejected big chunks of, like, pumice and basalt. So there are these big boulders that are the size of, like, beach balls to the size of, like, a VW bug that are just littering. So it looks like something had, like, been bubbling, but huge.
I love it.
And then just frozen. And it's all covered in this super, super brightly colored moss. So it looks like outer space. And then you kind of turn up the peninsula and you see mountains and a glacier. And you're like,
fuck.
What? Oh, that was the other thing that was wild. So when we were driving up the East Coast, there's 2 very large glaciers. And they're always kind of off in the distance. Mm-hmm. And they're just like these white caps. And to me, I kept thinking that they were clouds.
What?
But it's all like one smooth dome. So you're constantly like, there's this one extremely large, smooth cloud that's just hugging the mountain. And you're just seeing it out of the corner of your eye all the time. And then I'm like, oh yeah, it's a glacier. It's so big. And then the other thing is, because it's so big and it's just white and featureless, your sense of how far away it is and how big it is completely warped. Like, you feel like it should be getting bigger or smaller as you approach or recede, but it's so big that it doesn't.
It's just, it's like, just there all the time.
Yeah, so your sense of perspective, it's very weird. But my first impression when we landed is you immediately feel this, like, zing of energy.
Oh, I love it.
The geology is so active, you know. Obviously, everywhere around the world, like, geology is happening, whether it's
whether you
know,
like it or not.
Volcanic... like it or not,
geology.
We live on a rock.
That's right.
And rock things happen on
it.
No,
that's right.
But like, there's slow, passive types of geology, just like erosion, soil depositing and piling up.
Which you're never gonna really notice. Right.
Yeah. But this is like new land. Like I said, the island is growing as fast as your nails are growing.
Right. Like,
this is crazy.
Yeah.
So you're having like cataclysmic
huge things happening that like shake and violently and change the weather around the world and completely reshape the landscape on a very short time scale. So you can just feel like how active it is. And I would reckon that other volcanic places would feel like that as well. Yeah. Like I get the impression from people that have been that like Hawaii feels very much like that. Mm. So that was my first impression.
Yeah.
And there was also sort of this, because I've worked with some of the Norse gods, and there was like sort of a Freya, kind of like a female, sort of maternal, but also kind of wild. So not like an earth mama maternal, but like kind of like a mother of the animals, sort of wild presence.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is also interesting because there had been a few other waves of limited immigration onto Iceland from Ireland and so forth, but the island itself was not inhabited. So it's not like Greenland or other islands like that where there were people there before.
Right, no.
The Vikings got, you know. So it was kind of this very active place that did not have a human presence until fairly recently. So
do you think like Mama Earth energy, like Mama, like Gaia, like,
yeah, I would say more like kind of like Freya, okay, in her role as sort of one of the Vanir. If you think of the Aesir as sort of being the more patriarchal Iron Age Indo-European gods that are analogous to, you know, like Sky Daddy Zeus, Sky Daddy Thor, you know, that kind of cast.
Yeah.
And then you have like Freya and Freyr and some of the Vanir who were in the cosmology, sort of the earlier, more earth, more elemental,
right,
deities. And if you take that as a metaphor for the actual timescale and actual biography of how those people worship, the idea that they were more indigenous, pre-agriculture, pre-sedentary civilization type gods that were folded in. So they were slightly older, more abstract, more nature gods. And like I said, sort of that mother energy, but more like that mother of the forest or mother of the animals type of energy. So not like Demeter, like grain mama making you bread.
No.
Feeding you soup by the fire, sort of that kind
not
of.
Not that mama.
No, kind of a wild, like a bear mama that's
okay.
I love you, but I will also wreck shit.
I might eat you. Okay. I like that. All right.
So, yeah, that was basically my first impression when I got boots on the ground. And we had this 45 minutes right in the morning after being basically up for
forever.
Yeah.
But right off the bat, you felt it. Like, you felt like this energy, this presence, this like land. Like, it is like literally, like, it's almost like the most in your face land connection you could fucking feel.
Yes, there's just this electricity,
yeah,
like in the ground. You just feel the newness and that the activity that's sort of literally simmering under the surface.
Yeah.
And there was a very, and this might be me projecting what I was expecting, but a vaguely sort of Freya Norse sort of goddess energy is what I got.
That's, I mean, that sounds incredible. So I know that's just giving everybody just a little taste. I know we spent a lot of time on all the things we did for Imbolc and whatnot, but Iceland Part 2 coming at you next weekend, and you can like really get a feel for all of the amazing shit you did, and I cannot wait to hear it. And I'm sure everybody out there can't wait either. So until next time,
hocus pocus, bitches.